Hey everyone, thanks for connecting with this message from Hurricane Community Church, where we're all about inviting people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to connect with us further, consider subscribing to our YouTube channel or following us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Most importantly, we hope that connecting with HCC will help you take next steps in connecting with God.
Well, welcome to the online campus of Hurricane Community Church. We're glad that you've chosen to spend this time with us. If you happen to follow me on any of the social media channels, you probably would notice that I'm one of the most boring follows around. I don't post much, and I don't comment on much of anything. Sometimes I share the church's post or like them or comment on them, but for the most part, I stay pretty disengaged from social media. I follow along with what other people are doing, but as far as my engagement level, it would be considered relatively low. One of the reasons I don't engage in social media very much is because it has a tendency to fuel some insecurities that I carry with me, even to the point of wreaking havoc with them. I see a post from a family on vacation over spring break, and then I see a post from the same family on vacation over the summer, and another post from the same family on vacation over fall break. And I begin to struggle because I don't have the ability to provide that number of getaways for my kids and for my family. And I begin to struggle because I feel like maybe my kids are missing out on things that other kids get to experience because of my inadequacy or my inability to provide. So the solution to this fear of missing out in relationship to comparing to others is to make sure that whenever I post something and whatever I post, it's posted in such a way so that it makes it look like I'm getting the most out of life and it leads others to feel like they're missing out on something compared to what I am doing. Now, it doesn't matter what I'm able to provide. What matters is I'm not able to provide as much as someone else. And the solution I suggested isn't really a solution. But isn't that what we try to do? We try to make our lives look like we're getting the most out of it sometimes. And if we're brutally honest, we'll even take a little bit of joy when our post or our experience leads someone else to compare to us and feel as if they're missing out on something. The fear of missing out is a very real fear that many of us face. And when it comes to comparison, the real solution to the fear of missing out is found not in comparing to others, not in making our lives look better or different than maybe it really is, but the real solution is this: never compare to anyone else's highlight reels. The day-to-day experience of my life will never match the highlight reel of someone else's maybe once-in-a-lifetime experience. So rather than compare to the big moments, I should pay attention to the small day-to-day moments of life. It's about the decisions we make day in, day out that intertwine with the bigger decisions of life. And sometimes we can pay so much attention and focus so much on the big decisions of life that we miss out on the day-to-day small things. There's a story in the biblical narrative about a woman by the name of Ruth that is a story about decisions. And so there's a connection to our stories, because just like Ruth's, our stories are stories of decisions. The day-to-day, small, routine decisions that intertwine with the big decisions of life. So this is how the biblical narrative picks up the story of Ruth. In the days when the judges ruled in Israel, a severe famine came upon the land. Now, we're not really sure the specific time frame of Ruth's life, But what we do know is that it occurred during the period of the judges in Israel. There was a period of time before Israel was led by a king that Israel was led by a period of judges. This time is found in the Old Testament part of the Bible in a book called Judges. And what it records is a very tumultuous time of history for the nation of Israel. Well, in the midst of this tumultuous time, a great famine hits the land. And the famine that hits the land isn't one that is, I'm not sure where my next meal is going to come from, though that would probably be bad enough. This famine was of the magnitude of, I'm not sure there's going to be a next meal because there isn't any food anywhere. And though one would be bad enough, I would think that this type of famine would lead to a certain level of desperation and taking extreme measures as necessary, which is actually the case for that we find for one family in this story about Ruth. It says, so a man from Bethlehem in Judah left his home and went to live in the country of Moab, taking his wife and two sons with him. There may be food in Moab, so why not take a shot? One thing we know is that there's no food in Judah, so let's take a shot and go to Moab and see if there's food there. One thing that is for certain is that what is in Moab is Moabites. And the Moabite people were considered sworn enemies of Israel. The only reason an Israelite would go to Moab or really even interact with Moabites was if they were in some type of desperate circumstance. And so this guy by the name of Elimelech takes his wife and his two sons into the land of Moab, into the land of his enemies, just trying to survive. So, a short time after they arrive in Moab, Elimelech dies. And about 10 years after that, Elimelech's two sons who had both married Moabite women die. And that leaves their mother, according to the Jewish culture of the day, with no one left to care for her other than her daughters-in-law, who would have had no moral obligation to do so. Well, after a period of time, word reaches Naomi that things have turned around in her homeland. And so it's time for her to return. And this is what the biblical narrative recounts in this part of the story. Then Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had blessed his people in Judah by giving them good crops again. So Naomi and her daughters-in-law got ready to leave Moab to return to her homeland. The famine had ended, and it was time for Naomi to return home. But this journey from Moab would be very different than the journey to Moab. Her husband had passed, her two sons had passed, and she now had no one to care for her except her two daughters-in-law. And the story records that they're willing to go with her. But Naomi has some additional conversations, and one of her daughter-in-laws, by the name of Orpah, not to be confused with Oprah, decided to return home to her family. Ruth, on the other hand, decides to choose a different path. Now, there is no condemnation for Orpah. She simply did what was expected and what was reasonable. She probably returned home to her family to allow her family to care for her as a widow, to possibly meet someone else and marry someone else that would take care of her long term and provide for her needs according to the society and customs of the day. But Ruth, in choosing a different path, opened doors to big things happening that she isn't even aware of when she makes the decision she makes. She's simply paying attention to the detail needed in the moment with an eye on her relationship with Naomi. Ruth chooses to stay with Naomi. And the words that she says to Naomi are perhaps some of the most beautiful and powerful words ever spoken to a mother-in-law by a daughter-in-law. And here's what Ruth says. "Don't ask me to leave you and turn back. Wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you live, I will live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Wherever you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord punish me severely if I allow anything but death to separate us." Ruth's commitment to Naomi is unwavering. And Ruth's commitment to Naomi is inspiring. It is in the day-to-day decisions that she makes the big decision to uproot her life and to go and follow Naomi and stay fully connected to Naomi. After they arrive in Judah, Ruth begins to harvest wheat, leftover wheat from the field. She follows along behind those who harvest, and she picks up leftover wheat for food. And she just happens to glean from the field of an influential and wealthy person by the name of Boaz. And Boaz also happens to be one of Naomi's relatives. And Boaz takes notice of what Ruth is doing. And he goes to her and he tells her to glean as much wheat as she needs, as often as she needs. And she will do so with the full guarantee of his protection and provision. And while Boaz has a certain attraction to Ruth, he communicates one of the reasons why he tells her it's okay to glean from his field with the full guarantee of his protection and provision. And here's what he says to Ruth. "But I also know about everything you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. I have heard how you left your father and mother and your own land to live here among complete strangers. May the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge, reward you fully for what you have done." So Boaz comes to Ruth and tells her that she is a woman of character, that this moment when he goes there is just a normal average day. He's just gone to check on his fields. But in a normal average day, a door opens for him to extend compassion and kindness. And every day, for people like you and people like me, present open doors to extend compassion and kindness to people around us. And showing kindness is never a poor decision, it's never a wrong decision, and it's never a bad decision. Now, we've all lived enough and experienced enough to know that kindness oftentimes isn't returned or repaid. But even when it's not, kindness is never a bad, poor, or wrong decision. Boaz extends kindness to Ruth, in part because it had revealed her character of extending kindness to Naomi and the commitment that she made. Well, as Naomi and Ruth share with one another about what's going on, Naomi begins to perceive that there might just be a little bit more to the story than gleaning wheat for Ruth and Boaz. And so Naomi gives Ruth some dating advice. And in following the dating advice, Ruth essentially proposes to Boaz. And here's how Boaz responds to Ruth's proposal. "The Lord bless you, my daughter. You are showing even more loyalty now than you did before, for you have not gone after a younger man, whether rich or poor. Now don't worry about a thing, my daughter. I will do what is necessary, for everyone in town knows you are a virtuous woman." in the way she had conducted herself and in the way she had made the day-to-day decisions and the small things and even the decisions and the big things. Ruth had garnered a reputation as being a virtuous woman. Everyone knew she was a woman of character. Everyone knew that she had done the right thing and would make the right decisions. And Boaz says to her, "Don't worry about a thing. I will do what is necessary." And what he's talking about there is something in the Jewish society that's known as a kinsman redeemer. Before Ruth and Boaz can move forward in their relationship, the logistical detail about the kinsman redeemer needed to be addressed and resolved. A kinsman redeemer was someone who was the closest male relative who would take on the responsibility and privilege of caring for someone in the family who had lost a spouse or needed care. In this situation, Naomi was in need of a kinsman redeemer. And Boaz, as a close relative, would have been eligible to serve as a kinsman redeemer. And not just to Naomi, but also to Ruth, as Ruth's widowed daughter-in-law, though there would have been certainly no moral obligation to do so. But there was another individual who was closer, a closer relative than Boaz. And so Boaz could not serve as the kinsman redeemer until this person either accepted or declined the responsibility to do so. So Boaz tells Ruth that he will do whatever is necessary. And part of the role of a kinsman redeemer was to redeem the property, to purchase the property that had been owned by the other individual. So in this particular case, the kinsman redeemer would have had the opportunity to purchase and redeem the property that had been previously owned by Naomi's husband, Elimelech. And so that's the angle that Boaz takes to approach the potential kinsman redeemer about this situation. Though Boaz is definitely more interested in serving as the kinsman redeemer to Ruth than he is the kinsman redeemer for the property. So here's how Boaz approaches the potential kinsman redeemer. "I thought I should speak to you about it so that you can redeem it if you wish. If you want the land, then buy it here in the presence of these witnesses. But if you don't want it, let me know right away because I am next in line to redeem it after you." Now, the potential kinsman redeemer. And one of the interesting things about this person is we actually never find out his name. We just know that there was another closer relative that was in line to serve as the kinsman redeemer. And this kinsman redeemer is all about redeeming and purchasing the property until Boaz adds another factor to consider in the process. And here's what Boaz says. "Of course, your purchase of the land from Naomi also requires that you marry Ruth, the Moabite widow. That way she can have children who will carry on her husband's name and keep the land in the family." Now, for whatever reason, the person Boaz is addressing cannot take on Ruth as his wife. And so he declines to serve as the kinsman redeemer. And in declining to serve as the kinsman redeemer, he opens the door for Boaz to serve as the kinsman redeemer. So he takes off his sandal and he gives it to Boaz, which was a way of confirming the legal transaction of handing the responsibility and rights of the kinsman redeemer to Boaz. And the other thing that's interesting is we don't really know what happens to the land that Boaz purchased. And we don't really know what happened to the potential kinsman redeemer who didn't redeem the land or marry Ruth. But we do know what happens to Ruth and Boaz. Ruth and Boaz marry, and they have a son named Obed. And Obed has a son named Jesse. And Jesse has a son named David, who would become known as Israel's greatest king. And one of the interesting footnotes about this is, at the beginning of the story, none of the Israelites liked the Moabites. They wouldn't go to Moab. They wouldn't interact with the Moabites. But as the story unfolds, David, Israel's greatest king, actually is part Moabite. 14 generations later, Jesus would be born, a descendant of Israel's greatest king, David, a descendant of Boaz, a descendant of Ruth, a descendant of a Moabite, a descendant of a Moabite woman who had extended compassion and kindness, who was diligent in the day-to-day decisions of life, who paid attention to the small things and recognized how the small things and the big things intertwined together into the grander story that God is writing. The story of Ruth and Boaz is a fascinating story. It's a beautiful story in so many ways. But one of the most beautiful parts of the story is that Boaz and Ruth were attracted to each other's character and kindness as much as their physical appearances. And oftentimes the fear of missing out leads us to focus so much on the big things that we neglect the small things. We neglect the day-to-day decisions. And our character and our kindness can sometimes suffer in the midst of that tension. But the story of Ruth and the story of Boaz is a story of kindness and compassion. It's a story about how the small things and the big things intertwine together into the grander story that God is writing. And your story, like my story, is a story of decisions. It's a story of decisions in the day-to-day. It's a story of decisions in the big things. It's a story of decisions through which I don't have to compare my life to those around me. I just have to connect to the story, the grander story that God is writing. Navigating the day-to-day decisions, navigating the big decisions with compassion, kindness, and character will take us further than comparing to anyone else's highlight reel ever will. Let me pray for you as we wrap up this time together. Dear God, thank you for this story, this beautiful, powerful story of a woman who approached the small things with character, compassion, and kindness. Thank you for the story of someone like Ruth, whose story connects with my story. Thank you for the story of a guy like Boaz, who extended compassion and kindness and was willing to do whatever was necessary to serve as Ruth's kinsman redeemer. Thank you for someone like Naomi, who could speak wisdom and godly counsel into the life of someone like Ruth. Thank you for the grander story that you are writing, not just in the story of people like Ruth and Boaz and Naomi, but in the lives of people like me. God, help each and every one of us to discover how to connect the day-to-day details and decisions with the bigger decisions of life into the grander story that you are writing in all of our lives. And for this, we thank you, and we ask that you surround us with wisdom and guidance and compassion and kindness, and that as we are surrounded with those things become evident in our lives as well. Thank you for all this. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, thank you for choosing to connect with the online campus of Hurricane Community Church. We hope that this time together has helped you take a step in your relationship with God and following Jesus. And we hope that you'll connect with us again next time for part 4 of the hashtag FOMO series.
Thanks again for tuning in. And we hope this message helped you take a step in your relationship with God. If you're considering other ways to connect, Check out HCC's website, social media, and YouTube channels.